This episode of the Playlist Podcast is brought to you by City So Real, a masterwork, pulsing with life, utterly gripping. National Geographic's critically lauded documentary series City So Real appeared on more than a dozen 2020 best of lists, including President Obama's. The series from award-winning documentarian Steve James, director of Hoop Dreams, delivers a fascinating and complex portrait of Chicago, the quintessential American city, set against the backdrop of its history-making 2019 mayoral election and the tumultuous 2020 summer of COVID-19 and social upheaval following the death of George Floyd. The series is for your consideration for outstanding documentary or nonfiction series. For more information, visit natgotv.com/FYC or stream all episodes now on Hulu.
Welcome to another marvelous episode of the Playlist Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Mike D'Angelo, and on this episode, my co-host Brian Farver and I got to sit down with the director, Kate Herron, who is the director of the show you might have heard of called Loki. So that hits Disney Plus today. Kate is a delightfully sweet person and a true fan of Loki, so it was really fun to just chat with her about the show and Marvel's general creative process and the impact that Loki, you know, is going to have on the universe, whether we can expect a season two, you know, another character she'd want to work with within the Marvel universe, and so much more. But before I send you on your merry little way to listen to us gush over Kate, I do have to tell you that the Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes Be Real, Deep Focus, The Fourth Wall, and more, and can be heard on iTunes, Anchor FM, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and now Spotify, all any place you get your podcasts. So be sure to subscribe and drop us a comment or a rating. And as always, thank you so much for listening. Now, without further delay, our chat with the wonderful Kate Herron. I want to welcome director Kate Herron to the Playlist Podcast to discuss her latest little project that you probably haven't heard of called Loki. It hits Disney Plus this week. Kate, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Hello.
Of course, of course. So, you know, in kind of doing our research for this, I heard that you had a very intense, extensive pitch for this series. I think it was like 60 pages or something.
Yeah.
I don't expect you to go over that from front to back with us, but I'm curious, how much of the spirit of that still remains? Is it changed at all, or is it very much what you envisioned, you know, going in?
Yeah, so I suppose it's like any project, right? Like you go in with a vision and an idea, but then obviously you bring on your brilliant team and you keep evolving, you know, the story, the design, everything, because it's collaboration. But I think when I went into it, I just felt like I wanted to give them a big download of everything in my brain. And I was very aware that, like, you know, the other directors I would be up against, I didn't know who they were, but I just had the assumption they're probably going to be more experienced than me because I hadn't done a big genre project like this before as a director. So I basically covered everything, I think. Like I spoke about design, how the TVA would look and feel, what Loki meant to me as a character, music. There's a few, I made like a playlist and there's actually a song, I think this is okay. There's a song in episode two, Clara Rockmore's cover of The Swan, which you can hear in episode two. That was in my original playlist. So yeah, I just kind of went in and just was like, this is the tone and the feeling of the show and hopefully you guys like it. But I just figured, you know, go big or go home because who knew if they'd meet me again. But luckily they liked my pitch and here I am, so.
Hooray.
And I wanted to ask you, I mean, the look of Loki, it's really like retro futuristic. Like it definitely brings to mind like those 70s sci-fi, you know, book covers, really beautiful covers. Like how did you settle on the look of the TVA, like specifically?
Yeah, so with the TVA, I would say like I wanted the whole show to be like kind of this love letter to sci-fi, and so I stole from multiple sci-fi films. Like, I mean, you know, Blade Runner, Metropolis, the book Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy for like the fish out of water aspect. The font on the computers was sort of inspired by the ones in Alien. What else? The time doors in the show from Dune. There's lots of stuff that we were kind of referencing. I mean, but I think for me, like, so Kazra, the production designer, is a genius and something I felt from the off, because basically I pitched and I had a lot of my pitches for the TVA in particular were trying to, I suppose, capture this place that's like, you know, in the comics we see it has those amazing images where it's like desks going off into infinity, but the TVA is outside of space and outside of time. So it's not like on a planet, there's no sun. It's like this unknowable place. So it's kind of working out, how do you capture the unknowable and make that feel like a living, breathing office space? So it had like a kind of Vegas-like quality to it. I think weirdly, because at that aspect, and also the mystery running through the show, like I love film noir, and I was like, oh, it'd be really cool to like give this kind of a detective look to it, because I think that could also lend itself to, you know, just the lighting, because there isn't day or night at the TVA. So yeah, so I think that was fun. But a lot of my pitch had a lot of brutalist architecture in it, like where I grew up in Southeast London, I grew up near where they filmed A Clockwork Orange, and Children of Men was also filmed near where I live. And so I think because the timekeepers are like these all-knowing, like, you know, overseers of the timeline, I thought, oh, well, the brutalist architecture felt right for the TVA in that sense. And then because the TVA are very heroic, you know, they're taking care of the timeline, I thought, well, Midwest is kind of cool, like bringing those two ideas together. And with the retrofuturistic, I think honestly some of it was obviously films like Brazil, but also my own experience working in offices as a temp, because I remember working on computers that were like old and needed updating, and you know, a lot of these places I was temping at were like institutions as well, so they were not updating stuff, and I thought, oh, it'd be so funny to me if the people at like the top of the tree and in charge of our destiny, maybe they don't have the most futuristic looking tech. Maybe it hasn't been updated, because if it ain't broke, like, so I kind of had that idea in my head. And then Kazra came in and we were just on the same page from the off. Like I remember there were even images in his pitch that were in my pitch. So I was like, oh, we've got to work together on this. And yeah. And then obviously from those ideas together, you know, the TVA was born. I mean, something that was important to me and Kazra, but also my DP, was that I love doing long takes, and I was really inspired by films like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Scott Pilgrim, in the sense that they have these amazing practical sets and you see characters, you know, like walk from one to the other. And I think for me, that was something we really wanted to do with the TVA. So, I mean, this is in the trailer, so I just really don't want to spoil stuff for people. But like, for example, like you see Tom and Owen step out of an elevator and they go down a hallway and into this room we call the Time Theater. But that was one massive set, and we deliberately built it that way so we could do stuff like that, to again, just make this sort of fantastical place feel like grounded in a real living, breathing environment. So, and breath.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, speaking of Tom, I mean, everything I hear about Tom Hiddleston is that he's just the nicest, easiest, best guy to work with. But I guess I have to imagine that he's pretty protective of Loki, like as a character, after like, you know, over 10 years of playing him. Were there ever points that you two disagreed or, you know, clashed on where you thought the character should go?
Not really. I think the thing that was so nice, so when I first met Tom, basically I flew to New York to meet him before D23. And we had this really amazing chat just walking around the city together. And it was cool from a fan perspective, because obviously that's the last place we saw Loki was New York. So I was like, this is cool. But honestly, I think the thing we were really united on was that the central, I think I remember him asking me about what I thought the show was about. And I was talking about, you know, what makes a villain and what makes a hero, and that gray area in between is what generally interests me in characters anyway. Like, you know, can you move past any mistakes, or will you always be defined by those, or is there room for growth? And I think that was something that we both really connected on. And then beyond that, really, I just was talking to him about Loki and what I loved about the character in the MCU and the comics. And he also had the same, you know, we're both Loki nerds. So it was really just for us, I think, paying respect to what had come before, because he's got one of the best arcs in the MCU, but also having a good reason to kind of go back in with the character and what kind of journey we're going to take him on. Because obviously this is Loki from Avengers. He's in a very different emotional headspace to the Loki that we saw obviously change and grow and unfortunately die in Infinity War. So yes, I think really, I think Tom called it synchronizing watches. And I think that's kind of what we did really in that first walk and, you know, around New York together. And yeah, he's been an amazing creative ally across the whole process.
Yeah. And it is really fun to watch him kind of almost on his back foot, you know, in these first couple episodes, not to really give anything away, but he's kind of like, he's the fish out of water, which is kind of strange for him. And it's, he plays it so hilariously and heartfelt. It's just, it's really fun. But, you know, getting over to the Marvel process of it all, everyone we talk to that works with Kevin Feige or Marvel or whatever, it describes the process as like super collaborative. Mm-hmm. My basic challenge to you is to kind of describe this process, how it works in that, you know, with these series, there's a director, there's a showrunner, there's writers, there's Kevin, there's other people that are working on these shows. How does everybody get input without choking each other, basically?
Yeah, sure. Well, we didn't actually have a showrunner on Loki. Like,
oh, really? So that was kind of you.
More like, I would say, like, it's a tricky one, right? Because like they ran these like movies. So I would say, like, you know, like I filmed all, obviously COVID stopped us halfway, but like, I think it was really collaborative from the go. Cause like I worked with Michael, like I would with a writer on a film. So we were both talking to each other and collaborating in that way. And he ran the writer's room. And then when I started, we did like a separate like mini writer's room with Alyssa and Eric and Michael. And we were just talking about some more of the story. But really I would say like, you know, like Kevin Feige oversees everything at Marvel. So in a sense, I guess that, like, you know, he's the showrunner of Marvel, but I think the best way I can always explain it to people is that they just ran it like a giant film. So, which is why also my last day is tomorrow. So, but yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed working on it. It was a really collaborative process. I think Kevin Feige always kind of pushes you, like, even if you have a good idea for where you think the story could go, or like, you know, a moment in the show, he's always like, it's great, but let's like see if we can push it further, let's see if we can break it, and if we break it then we go back, obviously, because we know that, you know, this point works. So I think it was just really fun working with him, and obviously, you know, working with Marvel, you're getting to work with like visual effects teams that are like top of their game, and that was really amazing for me as a filmmaker. And yeah, but I'd really say it's really just about kind of going back to the synchronizing watches, like, you know, me and Michael, we both connected. Like I loved the script, because I read the first episode when I pitched for it, and I thought his script was fantastic. And you know, I used to do improv, and I think for me it was really just kind of yes anding all the ideas in there and keeping the integrity of like what the story was about, but just always like, oh, okay, cool, this is great, but maybe we could do this or we could do this, and kind of just trying to be a good team player. I think that's really the thing with Marvel. I mean, you see like so many of the writers and filmmakers and just heads of department, they all go on to other stuff with Marvel. So I think it's, yeah, just sort of being a good collaborator, really.
No, that's fine. So with WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier having come out, and you guys were kind of developing these things at the same time almost, you know, was there ever a point where you're like checking in with them to make sure things are all lining up correctly? Or maybe you're just talking as directors and you're like, okay, that's what they're doing. We really need to like either up our game here, or we're on the right track, because I think we really have a strong identity here. Was there ever like a no shit moment, or was it like, I've got this?
No. So I would say, honestly, like, so the secret sauce in our show, there's a creative producer called Kevin Wright, and he was working with Stephen Broussard, the other executive. And obviously, like, they are both like, you know, everyone at Marvel is always talking and checking in. And really, Kevin Wright would let me know if anything was, you know, going towards something or the other. But I think the main thing that I really liked about working with them all was that it was always like, you know, story first. And if it's good for story, or good for a moment in the show, and everyone's excited about it, then they would kind of work it out, as in, I assume, speak to the other filmmakers, or, you know, the ripple effect that some of these decisions would have. So no, I think honestly it was more, I would say, Kevin Wright and Kevin Feige just kind of letting us know if there was anything. But I really didn't, to be honest, feel like I was being kept in check at all. If anything, I was always being pushed to go further, go weirder, or just try and make the best story we could. So
I think that's part of the secret sauce at Marvel, is just like, mm-hmm. they're always trying to say weirder, weirder. And that's magical. That's what's magical about Loki. It's so weird, but in a great way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Feige himself has said the show has more impact on the MCU than any of the previous shows. And the fact that you're dealing with these multi-universal timelines, you know, that might have something to do with it. I mean, with all this said, can we expect any big names to pop up over the course of these later episodes?
I would say it's very cheap.
It.
No, I would say honestly, like, because, you know, I think the cool thing, without spoiling things for anyone, I would say that, you know, the thing I thought was cool, because I remember when I read the first script, so there's this moment where Loki obviously sees the Infinity Stones in this drawer and they're like, oh yeah, they're paperweights here. I remember reading that and being like, what? Like, yeah. Invested so much of my time into the films before. But I think that's kind of the joy of our show, right? Is that the TVA, this like new corner of the MCU, we kind of built upon some ideas of time travel, but it's almost like, actually, no, you know, it's almost like when we used to think the Earth was a different, you know, when we used to think the Earth was flat, and actually now it's like, oh no, actually now we see the Earth this way. And I think there's like an interesting thing with that, in the sense that, you know, we thought of time travel this way, but actually when you go to the TVA, learning about it through Loki's eyes, you're like, oh, actually the rules for this are very different. So I would mainly say, like, in terms of that, like, yeah, it's going to have an effect, obviously, because we've introduced this whole idea of time into the TVA, and also just what the TVA do, the timekeepers, and that, you know, free will and destiny, like, as we see with Loki, like, you know, he wasn't supposed to steal the Tesseract, and what has that done to reality? So, yeah, I would say, like, in that sense, I can't speak for other projects within the MCU, but yeah, it will, just in the nature of us defining these new rules for the MCU, that, yeah, it will have effects upon it.
Okay. Okay. And yeah, kind of along those similar lines, there was a report that dropped today that Loki is a standalone, just one season, which seems to kind of contradict other reports that there's a second season. Your thoughts on that? Are you kind of able to clarify that a little bit at all?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I feel like it's the one season, and, like, you know, I finish next week, so I'm very much just focused on this. Yeah, I mean, anything else I think would probably be something that Marvel will, I mean, you never know what Kevin Feige's planning, but no, as far as I'm aware, this is Loki's story, and this is what I'm on for, and yeah, and we wanted to tell, like, just a good story, really, across these six episodes for him, so.
Sure. Any other Marvel properties that you're going to be working on, or anything that you're looking to work on, or any characters that you'd love to work with?
Oh, there are so many, you know. I would say, I'm trying to think. I'm a massive Spider-Man fan. That would always be a dream of mine. I think Tom Holland is fantastic. I've really been enjoying his version of the character. But yeah, no, I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm really, you know, Kevin Feige is almost like my timekeeper, so like, huh. He wants to control my destiny and throw something else my way, that would be lovely. But yeah, but I honestly, like, for me, like, I love Loki, he's my favorite character, so that's why I made that, you know, intense document, because I was like, you've got to hire me for it. So yeah, so I it was really just like a dream come true, honestly, just getting to tell his story. So anything beyond that would just be, you know, cherry on top. So
yeah.
And it speaks a lot to their process in general, like we were talking about before, that they have all these people that they're working with, and everybody that we talk to says something very similar, like, if mm-hmm. Kevin called, I would do this again in a second. So that, I think that really makes sense, you know, that why they're being, you know, why they're Marvel. They're really nurturing creatives over there, which is a huge thing. But as far as Loki as a character and your love for Loki, I am curious to know, because this is something we were kind of debating before the interview. Like, I don't expect you to spoil anything or say that this happens in the show or anything like that, but there was this debate, is Loki worthy of love? Is he someone who should have a love interest or a love story? And, you know, some of us are just like, yeah, absolutely. The guy should, you know, eventually find someone that he can open up with. And other people are like, the only person he's going to love is himself, which mm-hmm. again, you could take in different ways in this show. So I'm curious where you land on that. Where do you see Loki as a character in the love of it all?
Oh, I think he's definitely a character worthy of love. I mean, that bit in Ragnarok with him and Thor in the elevator, and it's awful, right? You almost see his heartbreak when his brother's like, I think he'd be really good for you here. And it's just like, oh, he thinks so little of me. But I think that's why, like, I'm trying to think, his relationship with his brother, I think, is such a good example of that, right? Like, there's so much pain there and obviously mistakes that were made, but I was so happy when there was that reconcile and, you know, I'm here, and I think everyone was cheering for him when that happened. So no, I think he definitely is. I mean, I think that's why I love the character, really, is that, and why that arc across the last 10 years was so satisfying, because, you know, he dies trying to protect his brother. And like, is that not the greatest act of love there is? So mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think he's worthy of it. The only thing I would say for our show is that, you know, he's not that same Loki from Infinity War. Obviously, he hasn't had that journey. But I think with that, there's a lot to be dug into, because, without getting too nerdy about it, like, nature and nurture, right? Like, we kind of, he isn't arrested and goes to Asgard. He goes to the TVA. And it's a, you know, he's chaotic and we put him into a place of order. So I think for me, it'll be really interesting seeing, you know, Loki's in a very broken place when he's arrested by the TVA. And I think it'll be interesting to see how he changes and grows across the show. And is it a similar path or not? I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, but I would say, yeah, I feel like no matter where our Loki goes or how he's affected by what we do to him in the show, that I definitely think that he's worthy of love for sure.
Awesome. And I was on the same side there, but yeah, as far as, you know, we're all big fans of like sex education, and Loki obviously is a huge one for us. I guess I'm just wondering what else you have coming up in the pipe. Is there anything you can talk about that maybe things might be coming up?
Yeah, so I'm writing a comic book for Skybound, and that's going to be out, I think, around Halloween. It's like a awesome horror comedy comic. That's probably all I'm allowed to say. that's on the horizon, and they've been very patiently waiting for me to send them a new draft while I've been working on this show, so I'm very gracious with them. And I'm also working on a TV show with the same writer I'm doing the comic with, Bryony Redman, and it's sort of like a fun, weird sci-fi show, surprise, surprise. Yeah, and that's probably all I can say about it. Yeah, but no. So lots in the works and cooking along. But honestly, my main project is going to be sleep and relaxation when I'm done on this, because I haven't stopped for 2 years. So I'm just going to kind of chill out and play some games, you know.
I imagine there's a lot to catch up with at this point. You know, Marvel is probably an all attention grabbing thing.
Definitely. I need to finish God of War, and I've got a lot of things that I need to just, yeah, see people. I mean, like so many of us, right? Like, I haven't seen my family in nearly 2 years now. So yeah, so just, you know, normal things. So
you've got, you know, a Netflix show, you've got a Disney Plus show / Marvel fucking Marvel show, you've got a comic book, you know, you've got other things that you've done. What's the next dream? Do you have anything? Are you like, I'm checking things off too quickly here, or what's the thing?
Dream, I think, honestly, just the show that I'm creating with my writing partner, Bryony, like, that's been a passion project of ours for like over a decade now. And I think for me, like, bringing that to life, like, that would be so exciting, because in terms of the TV directing I've done, it's always taking on, you know, like, great characters and great stories, but I'd love to just bring one to life that's from my head, I guess, in that sense that, you know, it's not based on anything beforehand, just as a new challenge. Like, I've loved everything I've worked on, and I've learned so much on them as well. So yeah, but I suppose that would be the next challenge for me.
Nice. One thing at a time. I totally get it.
Yeah.
And we don't want to keep you too long, but I do want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. It's been a delight catching up with you and talking about Loki and all the things you got coming up. We've seen the first two episodes. We can say that. We can't say anything else, but I can say that I've absolutely loved every minute of them. Yeah. So I can't wait to watch what else is coming. And again, thank you so much for talking to us.
No, thank you. Cheers. Thank you.